Hey everybody, it's time for Truth About Markets on Resonance 104 in London.
And we're down by the coast, the North Carolina coast, and it is hot. And we're driving around because it's the only way to keep cool, to keep the air conditioning on. And it's only something like, 8:30 a.m. here, and it is hot. It's like 90 degrees out already.
I can check the exact temperature, but it is hot. It's super hot. I can verify that information. Where are we? Southport, you say?
Yeah.
Okay, Southport, North Carolina.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
Haven't seen any Confederate flags flying this time.
No. They've rid themselves of all of their Confederate flag sporting tendencies because of the genius of Black Lives Matter. Speaking of Black Lives Matter, you know, there's a chapter of Black Lives Matter in the UK now, in London.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you think about that? It's kind of strange the way it's kind of gone, jumped from the US to the UK.
Well, you know, they have a similar situation in the UK, but without the deaths. there have been, in the past, there were those huge riots. In, I think it was in Brixton or whatever, there were big famous riots decades ago. And of course there was an element of racial tension to the riots of 2011. But you don't have the cops, with guns going into those, housing estates and shooting people dead. So I think you don't have that.
Yeah, this in America you have horizontal discrimination, and in the UK it's vertical discrimination.
Meaning, what does that mean? That's interesting.
Yeah, so in the UK, it's vertical discrimination is all based on class. So it doesn't matter really color so much as your accent and your spermatozoa and what womb it impregnated. In America, there's not a class war so much. It's just outright skin color, horizontal racism that people, or sexism that defines the society.
Well, that's quite interesting. That's a good way to look at it. And I think also, in America, of course, you have the prison industrial complex. You have the beginnings of that as well in the UK now, but certainly in the US you have it. Plus, you have cable news. So there is no real cable news sort of system in the UK. I mean, you have a few new channels other than, BBC, ITV, and Channel 4. You have Channel 5, you have Sky. But you don't have that sort of need for keeping your audience very passionate. And, so in the U.S., it's all like crime porn on television. And, scapegoating and marginalizing people and targeting them basically for fodder for it to put into the prison industrial complex. So you don't really have that yet in the UK. Maybe one day you will.
Well, the Jeremy Corbyn and his genius in holding on to leadership of the Labour has, as one of the corollaries or ancillaries or collateral damage, I guess you could say, is that that whole attempt to boot him out has exposed the BBC. Because now more and more studies are coming out from think tanks and agencies pointing the finger at the BBC as having a very, very heavy anti-Corbyn bias. So this whole idea of impartiality, as we've been saying on the show for years, is blown apart. It's false. It's the equivalent of quote-unquote fair and balanced on Fox News. It's purely political. It's a state-run organ. So, but that's what Jeremy Corbyn's success is exposing, the fact that you have almost no media diversity in the UK whatsoever. Certainly on television, there is an attempt to have some diversity in print, but if you look at a publication like The Guardian, they always are pro-war, they're always pro-empire, they're always pro- the worst tendencies of the corporate oligopolistic state. So I mean, they'll throw a bone to that kid who looks like he's 12 years old, but
Owen Jones.
They'll give him some oxygen, and they'll do a little thing. Here's Owen Jones. He's our token liberal. He's our token lefty. But they will, when push comes to shove, silence any dissent when it comes to the pro-war, pro-corporate agenda. Pro-state, pro-monarchy.
Yeah. But you see, you know, this U.S. election is quite good at showing how they sustain this sort of system. You know, it's remarkable how much everybody has overlooked all of the stuff about Hillary Clinton, how much of a, you know, a corporate candidate she is. So, for example, the DNC, the actual convention where she was nominated, it's a huge event. Obviously, it's so many famous celebrities there, big production values, but it was financed by somebody, but they won't tell us who. And they won't tell us which corporate. Was it Goldman Sachs? Was it JP Morgan? Was it, you know, a fracking company? We don't know. But they are keeping that secret. It's not headline news. People aren't saying, oh my God. You know, and this is a known fact. It's a fact that they won't tell you who is financing their campaign. And yet, all of the media is talking about this fictional relationship between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, where there is zero evidence for that. Nobody's, they're presenting a case and then trying to get Trump to deny a false statement. Like this, it's hard to deny something that doesn't even exist.
Right. Well, first of all, you have an interesting development over there in the Democratic National Committee, the DNC. Mm-hmm. It's quite obvious that the candidate that could beat Trump more easily would be Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
But because Bernie Sanders doesn't support big banks, he was squeezed out. So right from the get-go now, they're putting up their weakest candidate. That would be Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. Okay, so Donald Trump now, we go into the debates. I predict he will eviscerate Hillary in the debates, and he'll be president of the United States come Election Day in November. And those who pushed Bernie out are going to reap the whirlwind of being non-strategic and greedy and self-interested for the banks instead of pushing what they would consider a quote-unquote progressive agenda. Now, in terms of Trump, another thing Hillary is going to do or try to do or represents is media chill. I mean, she doesn't want any debate, and she herself said that America is losing the information war to RT, which is our TV show channel, Russia Today. And they're very frightened by the fact that the media consumer out there in the world is getting an opinion different than their state opinion or the corporate opinion, the banker opinion from either the BBC or American mainstream media. So there will be a continued... So anyway, so Donald Trump is the relationship with Putin on a scale of 1 to 100 in terms of validity that would score a whopping zero. Whereas Hillary's creating ISIS, which is a talking point that Donald Trump has made.
Yeah, yeah.
On a scale of validity, that would score like a 90%. So here you have a public that says, here's a candidate that created ISIS. Every single week now, we have ISIS in the news slaughtering people, whether it's in Nice, for example, or connected loosely, or there's a jihadism element, or they have the church in France, the priest was murdered. Okay, that's ISIS. That came out of the loins of Hillary Clinton. That sprung from her womb of ideas. Okay, that's now 90%, 100% certain. Versus the made-up factoid based on nothing that somehow Russia and Putin are involved in the U.S. Political election. Now, the other point to that, just as a follow-up point, is let's assume the case that Russia is interested in U.S. elections. Well, what country is in the best position to actually fight jihadism? Let's see. That would be Russia. So if America is serious about fighting jihadism, which I don't think it is, but if it were, it would have to, without any equivocation, join arms with Russia if they wanted any chance of success. So the fact that they're turning down that possibility shows Hillary is not only creates ISIS, but continues to support ISIS.
And they also, I noticed, so at the DNC, you had Joe Biden say, you know, call Putin a dictator. And yet here's a party who was, like, behind the dictator el-Sisi coming to power, executing hundreds and hundreds of people in Egypt, behind Erdogan, also locked up tens of thousands of people now in the post-coup era, behind the Saudi king. And, you know, this is how they confuse the population over and over. There's another thing that's happening, another fake made-up story, the fake made-up headlines, which if you read, if you actually click on the link and follow the story and read the story, they provide no evidence, but they know the population is so stupid and so ADHD and so they won't look at it, but they are saying, because Jill Stein is gaining a lot of momentum. She's the Green Party candidate, and a lot of Bernie supporters are actually going behind her. Is it something like 25% of all of the Bernie supporters were like pro, they would vote for Jill Stein. So what they've done is, here's a woman who graduated from Harvard College, went to Harvard Med School, and she became an internist doctor for 20, 30 years. And she was she did an AMA on Reddit, and somebody asked her what her position was on vaccines. And a lot of people are against vaccines, they said, and what's your position? And she said, well, you know, as a medical doctor, I've seen that vaccines have eradicated many diseases. I do, however, understand why people are concerned and have doubts about vaccines, because if you look at the system, it's all corporate owned and controlled, and people therefore have doubts about, they question the integrity of the system. So she's saying she understands the voter. She understands, just like you could say, I understand why people are voting for Donald Trump. I understand why people are voting for walls. Like, you understand doesn't mean, just like a retweet isn't an endorsement. Understanding why somebody believes in something doesn't mean you support their position. But now they have all these headlines saying Dr. Jill Stein is an anti-vaxxer. So, you know, trying to get the left wing to reject her.
Yeah, the unfortunately, political debate is reduced to these four or five. I guess it goes back to pro-life, pro-choice. So most of American politics post-Civil War, where it was almost exclusively about racism, has become about pro-choice, pro-life. And people running for office, they, because of the, I guess, the large portion of evangelicals or low information people, are manipulated by this pro-life, pro-choice, what they call a dog whistle issue or a hot button issue, or a, you know, where you bypass the thinking faculties of the voter and go directly into their crazy zone. And so they got a lot of success with that. So they said, well, how many, we have to come up with some more of these memes or talking points that make voters incapable of being rational. Hmm. So vaxxer is one of these things that people just have in this auto reaction to that bypasses their cognitive abilities. There's also guns is another one of these issues. And you have, you know, the racism is still, of course, an issue in America. But there's just a few of them. And if you can steer some opponent into one of these four or five hot button issues, you then mobilize your massive monopolized media platforms to create hysteria in the voters, who then start voting in ways that are completely against their self-interest.
Yeah. For a while, remember, during the George W. Bush administration, there was a, you know, they did get the passion of the evangelical voter out and voting for gay marriage issues. But that seems to have disappeared. And it's interesting that the most famous transgender woman in the entirety of the United States, if not the world, is Kate Jenner. And Caitlyn Jenner is, of course, backing Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So that's quite interesting. And a lot of people, even the left-wing so-called progressives and whatever, were kind of mocking the DNC. And I mean, I felt it was pandering. They kept on having every single, they had like a black person, a Mexican person, a transgender person. They were doing every single sort of, you know, they were presenting them as this weird, considering it was this horrible corporate candidate who has done everything against all of these people, whether it's a Muslim, she had a Muslim family up there. You know, she's destroyed more, like all those Syrian refugees and Libyan refugees and Afghan, all those people fleeing across the Med and dying in the Med are either a direct or indirect, both, you know, both indirect and direct result of her policies and choices that she made as Secretary of State. You had her famous, like, you know, Hillary Clinton started her campaign when she was 17, her political life, as they all note on her history to the DNC, to the, as they were announcing her candidacy, her nomination, they did say she started her political career at 17, but of course they failed to mention that it was for a very, very right-wing Barry Goldwater, and so she was very right-wing at the beginning, and the reason why she got into politics was his book, The Conscience of a Conservative. Now, of course, she's backed by Paul Krugman, who's written A Conscience of a Liberal. So she's quite right-wing, and she has also, like, her foreign policy in terms of LGBTQ is horrible if you look at what's happened in Honduras. Mm-hmm. Once she
We're going to keep going, right, to keep get finish
yeah.
the stuff?
Yeah, yeah, don't worry. I'm just, but I'm getting off that main road.
Okay.
I'm going to go slow, okay? So she's, you know, in Honduras, we've had 235 LGBTQ activists killed since 1985. 230 of them have been killed since her U.S.-backed coup.
Yeah. Well, the LGBTQ community is extremely successful, the most successful civil rights group in America in the last, you know, 50, 60 years for sure, maybe 100 years. And, you know, they've been able to get themselves out of the hot button issue soup, I guess you could say, you know, but that leaves four or five yet that can be pushed, and guns is one of the issues, and this other issue that we were talking about is also, you know, part of that.
So, well, also the other interesting thing to watch is, you know, even The Economist was shouting on their front page, you know, finally the glass ceiling is broken, you know, that finally she smashes through this glass ceiling. And I corrected their headline saying, in the U.S., it's like Angela Merkel is one of the three most powerful people in the world and has been for the last 12 years. It hasn't been made a big deal about she's just powerful. And she controls all of Europe, and they have to do what they want her to do. I mean, you saw that quite clearly in this leaked, you know, everything is being leaked, leaked emails from General Breedlove, who is the head of NATO. And his emails show that he was trying to start a war with Russia. It shows quite clearly, it proves that he was intentionally trying to stoke a war with fake information, by the way. And from this crazy guy called Kremer, who was a crazy guy back in the first Cold War, and now is even a crazier guy during this Cold War. So he, Breedlove, was trying to push for war, and he was like obsessed with Merkel. Merkel kept stopping him. Merkel this, Merkel that. And, you know, here's a woman who's been stopping wars quietly, whereas openly, Hillary has been stoking wars and yet presents herself as some sort of liberal and progressive.
Mm-hmm. Right, and Bernie Sanders is the correct nominee to have. They squeezed him out, and Hillary's going to lose to Trump. So the DNC is making a huge mistake there. So Trump, meanwhile, I guess they're warming up for the debates coming up. It's a few weeks away, though.
August 25th.
Okay, August 25th. I mean, and that's going to really be interesting.
Well, you know what's going to happen, because we've seen this with the Brexit thing, is you're going to have her stand up there and try to dazzle people with facts and data.
Yeah.
And she's going to say, 3 out of 4, you know, LGBTQ, blah, blah, blah. Like, she'll say all this data that will go in one ear and out the other. And probably annoy all the people sitting on the fence, the Trump supporters, to come out and vote against her.
Yeah. Well, I remember Michael Gove, leading up to Brexit vote, you know, when asked about the expert opinion, his response was, well, I think people have had enough of experts.
Yeah.
So he's just dismissive of the whole idea of having an informed opinion.
Yeah, but people don't want it right now because
they don't want it. That's what I'm saying.
Because just as Jill Stein said, what she understands is she understands that people, there's a lack of trust, and the lack of trust is the danger sign. As Jeremy Grantham of BMO has just said, a huge investor, he even says he's a very rich guy, he's a successful banker, and he's saying there's a really... He came out with his latest newsletter. You can find it online. And he says, you know, we're in a dangerous times. And this is the dangerous times is because there's a collapse of trust in the elite, a collapse of trust in the people who run our society, the top 1%, the top 10%. And nothing is going to get through to them unless we change all of this stuff. We end the horrible situation for the bottom 99%.
Yeah, so that's, it worked for Brexit. They bypassed the facts, and they went right for the gut. And so, to your point, Hillary will get up there and start spewing facts.
Yes.
They're known as wonks in Washington. You know, they can quote chapter and verse policy initiatives and facts and data. And all that will be for naught, because people at this point know, as Michael Gove said, they've had enough of experts. You know, they're tired of the analysis now. They want action. They want something to happen for real. And so she will be ineffective in that debate, and Trump will simply point out some obvious things, like she broke the law many, many times, and so he's going to win.
They always say trust your gut, and this is now a trust your gut sort of election cycle. Like, whether it's in Greece or Spain or the UK, people no longer trust that what they're being told by the official slick, well-speaking, you know, well-spoken candidates, that those people are blinding you with their slick words. So when they're confronted by a Boris Johnson, who is very intelligent and smart, but you know, he doesn't speak like all those others. And Donald Trump, I'm not sure if he is very smart, but he can he speaks like a thug, a simple sort of guy. And mockery, by the way, this is the answer all the time, mockery. So the left wing and the progressive media just mocks people and think that's going to work. They tried that, and I keep on telling all my, you know, I have so many friends on Facebook from high school days who were like freaked out about Donald Trump, and how they respond to it is they call oh, look, it's uneducated people who like Trump. It's stupid people. It's racist people. And I said, you know, do that all you want if it makes you feel better about yourself. But the fact is, I saw the same reaction in the UK, mocking the idiots and stupid racist people who backed Brexit. And you know what? It didn't work. It didn't change anybody's opinion. And in fact, maybe made them double down because they were angry with you.
Well, Trump's language, it's not that it's dumb, it's that it's the language of a salesman. In other words, he closes deals, as he says often again, that he's interested in making good deals, he's interested in making good trade deals.
Yeah.
So when he speaks, he's speaking like a salesman. If you've ever encountered a salesman, maybe, you know, you've been out there and you've met someone selling you a property or someone selling you...
A washing machine
or something. I mean, there's a style in which one speaks to focus your attention on the action of buying something. And he is selling America on this idea of make America great again. Now, he has to close the deal, you know. The closers, the coffee is for closers, as they said in Glengarry Glen Ross. You know, close the deal, get the car. Second place, you get the steak knives. Always be closing. So Trump is always be closing, and he'll close this presidency job, and then we'll see what he's really up to. I mean, I don't believe anything he's saying now will be part of his administration. I mean, he needs to close the deal first, get in the White House, and then they start, doing deals. So we'll see what that means. It could be disaster, could be great. I know for a fact, however, that if you want more ISIS, you want more war, you want more bank favors, you want more bank bailouts, you want a bank bail-in, you know, you want, you then vote for Hillary, which would be a complete waste of a vote.
Well, I have to say the DNC and the Democratic Party did do a good job on convincing the media to not ask anything, a single question, no headlines at all in the U.S. in the whole time we've been here about the content of those DNC emails. None. All the headlines were that Putin himself from his own bedroom hacked into the DNC account because he's so scared of Hillary and her massive testicles. He is terrified of her and wants Trump. So, I mean, that's all the headlines. That's the level of conversation on all the cable news stations, on every single headline from every single Daily Beast or Politico. So that is quite remarkable that they got, you know, they got that.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot of money in war and prisons. And so far, what we've seen over there in Russia is an aversion to war and prisons. So that doesn't, it's not consistent with the war and prison party, is it? So they're going to do whatever they can to keep the war machine going, the prison machine going, the racist machine going. You know, I think they're going to lose.
Well, I don't know. I think I might end up voting for Jill Stein. I'm not sure. I think, you know, what would be good is I keep on hearing a vote for Jill Stein is a vote for Trump. We have only a minute left now, but I'm saying that a vote for Jill Stein is a vote for Trump, they say. And you know what? The one thing I did notice from our time in Europe is that that's a falsehood. They keep you trapped in this oligopoly, this lack of competition of ideas, by saying, like, getting you to, you know, if it's a Liverpool versus Man United, like getting you to hate the other team no matter what. And, you know, so you back this system of only two parties. And yet across Europe, we saw, say in Spain, a new party form, Podemos, and knock out the two-party system after decades of control.
Oh, yeah, but we saw in Greece and then they got co-opted. So
yeah, well, they did get co-opted, but it can happen. Syriza did win. They were not part of that two-party system. They were not the two powerful systems. They did. Okay, their guy sold out. Podemos did not sell out. But here you had a party. You know, at least Syriza had been around for a while. Podemos was formed in the middle of the night, you know, a few days before the election. You had to file for an election. So they formed and they won a huge amount of seats. They have members of parliament. They have people in there able to vote and do things. Obviously, you know, if he were running the country, he might get some visits from the economic hitmen. But that's it from this episode of The Truth About Markets, coming to you from the Carolina coast.
Bye, y'all.